Welcome to C3 San Diego. Need something fresh, real, and powerful in your life? Connect with us on social media, get live stream service notifications, podcasts, and up-to-date information on upcoming events. We are so glad you're joining us for a powerful, life-transforming message from one of our C3 San Diego pastors. We would love to hear about how God is impacting your life through this ministry. Please share your experience with us at info@c3sandiego.com. If you'd like to be a part of what C3 Church is doing in the city of San Diego and beyond, you can contribute financially by going to c3give.com and choosing the giving option that works best for you. We hope you enjoy this message.
Are you ready? I said, are you ready? I want to take up a story that's found. I'll just introduce my wife right here, Ginger. 41 years of marriage, pretty good. Married the same woman. I married her when she was 13. I said 12 in the other service, 13 now. I said 14 one time in Bulgaria, they all believed me. Oh, yeah, true, you gotta watch out where you tell jokes. But anyhow, so there's a fabulous story that's filled with principles from the Bible. And it's found over in 2 Kings. It starts in chapter 6. Well, I'll do the background, then we'll jump into chapter 7. But there was three mountain climbing teams several years ago. True story. All my stories are true. If they're not true, I'll let you know. Even if they're not true, they contain truth. And containing truth is as great as truth itself. I have no idea what that means. I say it all the time. It makes me sound intelligent. But anyhow, there's three teams that decided to climb the Himalayas. There was an American team. There was a European team. There was a Russian team. Of course, the American team was so scientific in their oxygenation of their blood and their levels and their workout routine. I mean, the whole thing, because that's just how Americans think. And the European team was about the same, not too far behind the American team. Then there came the Russians. Now, the Russians had no science. The only thing they brought with them is pig fat and vodka. True story. Absolutely true story. As they begin to ascend the mountain, the Europeans couldn't do it. The Americans stopped, and the Russians went all the way to the top. Came back down, picked up the Americans on their back, and crested on the peak of the Himalayas on nothing more than pig fat and vodka. The only thing I have today is pig fat and vodka. See, I discovered a long time ago that the great truths in the Bible are all simple. The greatest speeches that you've ever heard are the simplistic ones. The greatest speech ever given in American history is the Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln. It's got a little over 302 words. 260 of the 302 words are one syllable. But it moved. It moved the nation. What could be more simpler than God is love? What could have more one and two syllable words in it than the Lord's Prayer? Simple things are always profound. Jesus took the mysteries of the universe and brought them down into a seed planted in the ground. He could take the most complex things that scientists today can't gather and can't get their head around, and he can reduce it to such a simple denominator that the Bible would say that the farmer, the wayfaring man, the average individual could grab that truth and make that applicable to their life. So I have simple things. Simple things. The Bible's filled with simplicity. In fact, it warns us not to confound the simplicity that is found in Christ. Have you ever talked to somebody that's very intellectual? At the end of a conversation, you have no idea what they just said. I mean, they're just, you think, oh my God, they're smart, but I have no idea what, I can't even understand them. I can't even understand. I would rather be something I can understand. Yeah. And so the story in 2 Kings, it starts in 2 Kings chapter 6, and it's a story of the Syrian army that had besieged Samaria. Now, Samaria was a walled city. All ancient cities are walled. You can go all over Europe to this day, and anything past about 1,000 years is still walled because that was their means of protection. So they had besieged them and locked them in. So there was no way they can get out, and nothing could get in, and they couldn't get out. They were literally starving them to death. This had gone on for some time until they reached the climax of a desperate situation. They were eating a donkey's head. I mean, now that's got to be yeah, I've never eaten a donkey's head. I had cow cheek tacos one time in Mexico, and they were pretty good, but I've never eaten a donkey's head. To make matters worse, they were taking the droppings, the dung of a dove, and they were selling it and eating it. And then to even go to an extreme, and you have to be an extreme, two women begin to collaborate, and one woman said, "We will boil your son and eat him, and the next day we'll boil my son and eat him." And they boiled one and ate the son, and then the other woman hit her son. I mean, this thing had gone to such an extreme that the king of Samaria, when he heard about cannibalism, he tore off with sackcloth and ashes. He was just desperate. He calls for Elijah. He wants Elijah to come. Elijah comes over, and you take it up. You find this story, because these are just simple. There's always a simple solution for difficult times, for tough times. You know, tough times don't last. There's an old saying that says tough times don't last because tough people do. But we like to add on to that. Tough times don't last because tough people do, because tough times are man-made, but tough people are God-made. Tough people are made from God, so that's why they don't. But anyhow, so you take up, you look at verse 1 of the 7th chapter of 2 Kings. It says, "Now Elijah said about this time," he stands up. He said, "About this time tomorrow, the flour shall be sold for a shekel, and two sheaves of barley for a shekel." Now the donkey's head was 80. And now everything is about to change. In other words, he stands up. Now you gotta just grab this. He stands up and he says, in one day, in the next 24 hours, you don't even see it now, but everything's about to change. And the desperateness of this situation is about to be, it's about to evaporate. It's gonna be depleted. Now the reason why to me this has always spoken, one of the reasons, is because pressure always magnifies. It will always distort reality. We've all been under pressure. We've all been under the gun. And what happens in the midst of a very trying and tough situation, it exaggerates the problem. It pressure magnifies. It distorts reality, so my focus is no longer clear. The difficulty is so many of us in our past have made major decisions in down times. And the worst thing we can do is make a major decision. The best thing we can do is just stay steady, because this thing's going to shift. My emotional part of me is going to recalibrate, because right now my emotions are frazzled. They're not in order. They are distorting everything. They're high. They're tense. I'm edgy. I'm argumentative. I'm about to make a major decision. I'm about to say things I'm going to regret. I'm about to do something I'm going to live to regret. People divorce themselves under pressure. People leave churches under pressure. People leave jobs under pressure. People leave relationships under pressure. And then their ego won't allow them to go back and rectify the wrong later on. We got to hold steady. There are dips in life. There are high points and low points in life. Always make a decision when your emotions have clarity, when the emotions have an even keel within them. You got good people around you to help even you out and say, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Just wait, just hang on. This thing can shift. This thing can change. All of a sudden, and when it does, your mind gets clear, your emotions get clear, and you think, my God, I'm glad. Oh, I'm so glad I didn't say that. I'm so glad I didn't turn in that resignation. I'm so glad. We had a very, very, very close friend of ours years ago. I won't give his name, and I won't give the details, other than to say he was involved in a very, very large ministry in America. It wasn't a church. It was a Bible college, and he was the vice president of this particular Bible college, and he absolutely loved it. I never met a guy that loved his position and loved the school and loved the history of the school any more than this particular gentleman. In the midst of a heated argument, which should have never happened, him and the founder of the ministry got into it. It was unlike either one of them to lose their temper. It was just not like them. And so in the midst of that, he rose up. His emotions weren't where they should be. And he said, you'll have my resignation by tomorrow. Now, he probably thought that the founder was a very compassionate individual, would probably let it simmer and come back and say, you know, come on, let's work this thing out. That didn't happen. The ego rose up in both of them, being male. And the next day he turned in his resignation, the guy accepted it. That gentleman, it affected him so much. I've never seen this happen before. Sometimes there can be something underlying inside of us. It can be physical, it can be emotional. And a trauma can trigger a disease. A trauma can trigger something that we can live with all of our life and it'll never come up. It'll never come out of us. But in a trauma, that's why, you know, you talk about post-traumatic stress disorder. In a trauma, something gets triggered and it ignites something. He ended up, which is the opposite of Alzheimer's, a brain disease. It ate his entire frontal lobe of his brain over a 10-year period until he regressed back to being a child, not knowing any human being, and finally his brain could not operate his body, and it shut it down, and he passed away. Now, I have no scientific proof that all those are connected, other than the fact I was relating this story one time to some individuals, Ginger and I were, that were had a real prophetic gift inside of them. I mean, a real prophetic gift. And as soon as I realized, she said, trauma. That's a trauma that was triggered by this situation. And it killed them. Now, that's way out there. I understand that probably will never happen to you. And I'm not saying, but I'm saying it's so important to never make major decisions in difficult times. Pressure will always magnify. And you'll do something that you'll live to regret. Don't do it. Talk to somebody. Get it out of you. You know, Brother Ed Cole was a real mentor within our life, and he would say, if you don't have anybody to talk to, find a jackrabbit, tell every sin to the rabbit, and then shoot it. I thought that was good advice. Just shoot the rabbit. Praise, amen, in Jesus' name. And so one day can change everything. It can shift it. It can change it. All of a sudden you think, my God. You know, Ginger and I have been in the ministry a lot, over 40-some-odd years, and when we first planted our church, you know, sometimes things, yeah, I mean, where you start is no indication of where you'll finish. I tell young people this all the time. I've been telling this for years. Where you start is no indication of where you'll finish, but if you don't start, you'll never get anywhere. I've got a few Rob Carman originals, but that is one. Where you start is no indication of where you'll finish, but if you don't start, you're never getting anywhere. So I said, just start. What should I do? Do something. And so they asked me, we were living in New Mexico, in Albuquerque, and south of this, you know, New Mexico is surrounded by Indian reservations. There's 18 of them. 50% of the land is the fifth largest state in America. 50% of the land is all controlled by 18 different tribes of Indian. And if you know anything about an Indian reservation, you'll know that it's a nation within a nation. The United States government has no jurisdiction except the FBI. You cannot override the police within an Indian reservation without their permission, except the FBI can. They have their own judicial system. They have their own judges. They have their own governors. They have their own police department. And so we were on the Isleta Indian Reservation. It's a Bible study. And they said, and as I was just there a few months, but the thing started growing, and we were praying, and that's where our church started. It started with 35 people. 34 women and one man. I'll say, what can you do with 34 women and one man? I said, you know what you can do? You can change the world. Let me tell you something. These Indian women knew how to pray. I learned prayer by watching. People learn through observation. I learned prayer. I watched them. They would intercede for their community until their eyes were swollen shut. They didn't pray for 10 minutes. They prayed for 10 hours sometimes. They prayed, and it erupted into such a move of God that 18 years after we were off, our church became the largest church in the state of New Mexico. After we were off the reservation, we were only there a year and a half. The United States government did a survey, a door-to-door survey on the Isleta Indian Reservation. They asked them, what religion has had the greatest impact? And they only mentioned two things, Catholicism, that had been there 400 years. We'd been there for a year and a half. They mentioned us. That's it. It erupted. And we had so many people coming that they had to look in the windows. They couldn't get in the building. They looked through the windows. It was on a Tuesday. The church was a year and a half old, and the governor of the reservation, his name was Frank Hohola. He's Indian. And he came to me with a formal decree. It was a letter. And the letter read, "You must stop services immediately because you are a detriment to the Indian religion." I was 26 years old when I first read, or 27. When I first read that letter, I got excited. I said, "I've destroyed a religion." I said, "This is cool." Indian religion is 700 years old. I said, "I've destroyed it in a year and a half." Then I realized, I said, "This letter's for real." I remember reading that thing and thinking, "My God, they said, you must stop." I mean, that means, well, I have no recourse. He's the governor. They can take the council police and arrest me and handcuff the priest before I got there. You imagine what they would do to me. And so it was on a Tuesday. Now, we normally had a Wednesday night service. So I looked at Frank. He was the governor. He looks like a governor. Distinguished. And of course, I didn't touch the governor. I looked at him, and I only had one thought. And I said, Frank. I looked at the letter. I looked at the governor. I looked at the letter. "You must stop. Service." I had no money. No money. Nowhere to go. Nothing. This is over with. Stop immediately because you're a detriment to the Indian religion. Frank. I had one question. One thought came to my mind. I said, "Frank." Elijah said, about this time tomorrow, one day can change everything. I turned to the governor, Frank Hohola, and I said, Frank, do you want to know what I asked him? Do you want to know what I asked him? Yeah. You want to know now or tomorrow? Yeah. I'm going to tell you. I never tell people until they want to know. Because if you tell somebody who doesn't want to know, they don't care. That's profound. I said, "Frank." Here's what I asked. This is true. True story. I said, "Frank." He's the governor. Frank. Here it is. It's coming. I feel it. It's coming. I said, "Frank, can I have one more service?" He said, "Yeah." And then listen. So that was a Tuesday. The next day was Wednesday. We had a midweek service. And so people, they already found out about this. So it was a bad service. Because everybody's upset. So we had a little worship. That was bad. And then, so I'm explaining the conversation when in the midst of it, the back door of the church opens up. And this woman comes walking in, flaming red hair. Nobody had red hair. Flaming. And she sits down. And she heard me say what I said, and she raised her hand. I didn't know what to do, because most people don't raise their hand in the middle of a message. So I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she looks at me and she says, "I don't know where I am. And I don't know how I got here." And I thought, oh, dear God. The last service, and the devil sent me a crazy woman. And then she continued to talk. She said, She said a few moments ago, it's absolutely true, I was driving down the highway when the wheel of my car turned. And I drove down this old road, and I heard music. So I decided to come in. I heard you say what you just said. And she said, I want you to know that my sister owns a Catholic church. 4 miles north of here, 2 miles outside of the Indian land in the southern part of the city of Albuquerque. Now, from that day to this day, I have never known any human being, individual, that owns a Catholic church. I've never seen a Catholic church for sale. I've never seen people that own them. The archdiocese owns their own property. They don't buy and sell Catholic churches. So I walked up to her and I said, what's your sister? I got all the information. The next day, Thursday, I went looking for her sister. And I was fixated to find her house. The address is on this side of the road. So I found her house, knocked on the door, told her who I was, and said, do you own a Catholic church? She said, yeah. I said, where? And she points to the other side. I was looking there. I didn't even look. And she points to the other side of the highway. She said, what's right there? I said, you own it? She said, yeah. I said, is it empty? She said, yeah. I said, can I rent it? She said, yeah. I said, when? She said, now. Sign of agreement. That Sunday, we doubled the church. Doubled it. Doubled it. Doubled it. Doubled it. Because one day can change anything. One day. That one day is continuing today. And today. And today. One day. Stay married one more day. Serve God one more time. Pray one more prayer. Come to church one more time. When the pressure is at its peak, the victory is always the closest. That's been my, that my experience has always been when that pressure's there, victory's right, it's bumping, it's bumping, it's bumping, it's bumping. Just stay steady, whatever it takes. If you got to reach out to somebody and hang on to them, stay steady, because this thing's one. Elijah said one day, this is all going to change in 24 hours. One day can change everything. We were in that church a year and a half. Then we bought land, then we bought other land, another land. We were in that church a year and a half. You know what happened after a year and a half? The state of New Mexico came in and made it a state monument. It's empty to this day. It's a museum piece. It'll never be used again. God literally reserved that just for us for a year and a half. Now it's got a big sign in front of it. It's an historical monument to this day. Amazing story, amazing story. Still there, big sign. Anyhow, the next thought, There's lepers. Leper, verse 3 and 4. This says there were four lepers. I always think of these guys, you know. Remember the 10 lepers? Remember the 10 lepers? Sometimes lepers are smarter than a lot of Christians. Because they know that there's power in community. They hold each other up. You never find them by themselves. Didn't say there was one leper. There was 10 with Jesus. There was 4 over here. As devastating as leprosy is, they still recognize we need each other. As bad as it is. But there are 4 lepers sitting outside the gates of Samaria. These guys are interesting. You wouldn't think that tremendous truth can come from these lepers, but it does. And they sat there and they began to talk amongst themselves. And they said, if we sit, we're going to die. If we sit, we're going to die. I love that thought. I've always loved that thought. There's a whole message in it because I tell people all the time, if you sit, you die. If you sit, you die. Anybody can sit. Go do something. What should I do? Anything. Just do it. Because where you start is no indication of where you finish. You got an intern thing right here. Sign up. Sign up. Well, I'm not sure. Do it. You got conferences coming. Got whatever. The Emerge is coming up in March. Sign up. Do it. Because where you start is no indication of where you're going to finish. But if you don't start, you never get. If you sit, you die. The body requires movement. Everything God created moves. Everything God created moves. Everything God created moves. When movement, my heart is beating, my lungs are breathing, my blood is flowing, my eyes are seeing, my mouth is speaking, my arms are reaching, my legs are moving. When movement stops, death always occurs. Everything requires momentum in life. You've got to have movement for life to continue. If I sit, I will die. I got to get up, even if I, no matter what, I got to have movement. I can't be a spectator in life. I've got to be a participant, because when I sit, I begin to die. Just do something. I don't care what it is. You young people, if I took you with me, I'd put you on a helicopter. A Bible in one hand, a bush knife in the other, and a parachute on your back. Get you halfway across the world, open the thing up, and kick you out. You know, the time of your life. It took one guy. I've watched thousands and thousands of students graduate. I was executive international director for 7 years of Christ for the Nations. I went in thousands. In all of our graduations, only one guy came up to me, one kid, 19 years old, 20 years old. Mike Richards came up to me. His father pastored the largest church in one of the largest churches in El Paso. His grandfather pastored the largest church in Juarez, Mexico. His mother's Mexican. His dad is American. He came up and said, "What do you think I ought to do when I graduate?" I said, "I'm going to tell you what you're going to do." I said, "I'm going to send you 10,000 miles to the islands of Vanuatu, old New Hebrides, to the island of Tanna, and you're going to stay there for a year, and you're going to change the world." He did it. Only guy that ever took me seriously. Yeah, he did it. He lasted 8 months. I thought it was 7. He told me 8 because he got engaged to a girl from Finland. He had to marry her. And besides, the cyclones came in. He slept underneath trees. He traveled with the Jesus film and power generators. He preached the gospel. It's one of the most primitive islands in the world. There's cannibalism in some areas. He just tracked that area with a local guy named Barnabas for 8 months preaching the gospel. If you sit, you die. There's a world out there that needs you. There's a community that needs you. Why do I want to sit and stare at a computer screen, at an iPhone, when I can go out and impact the world I live in? You got those six-pack cards? Use them and change the world. But don't sit. These guys said if we sit, I got to hurry up. If we sit, we die. They said, if we go into Samaria, they're all dying anyhow, so we're going to die if we go in there. They said, maybe we'll get up and walk towards the enemy. They'll probably kill us, and then we'll die. We're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die. That's pretty good theology. You won't hear that in many places. We're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die. Why is that so powerful? Because there's something happens. This is the truth that has launched great careers. This is the truth that has built businesses. This is the truth that has taken men that have reached the brink of poverty and launched them into the landscape of being multi-millionaires. Because when you accept the worst, Charles knows this, when you accept the worst, you've got nothing else to lose. When I've got nothing else to lose, I've got everything to gain at that moment. Watch out, world. Watch out. I'm coming. Fear can't hold me. The devil can't hold me. Sickness can't hold me. Death can't hold me. It can't stop me. I've got nothing to fear any longer. I'm getting up and I'm going for it this time. I'm dangerous. Are you listening to me? You watch guys that have faced bankruptcy. They've lost it all. And then they reach the conclusion, I got nothing else to lose now. And no fear can grip me. No worry can. I got nothing to lose. And that's they lost. They take a risk. They get up. They do it. They reach out. They cast their net. They get out of the boat of human limitations. They cast their net on the water again. They do the impossible. And something begins to happen. There's a guy named Earl P. Haney. Look it up afterwards. Great story. He lost. Earl P. Haney lost his fortune during the 1929 crash. 25% unemployment in America, 900 banks closed, lost it all. He was devastated, filled. Worry gripped him, fear gripped him. He lost his money. And he went from 175 pounds down to 90. He was hospitalized. He developed bleeding ulcers in his stomach. He was attended to by three doctors. One of them was an ulcer specialist. Two nurses pumped his stomach 3 times a day. He lived on cream and alkaline powders with a teaspoon just to hold something down. He was riddled, racked with fear. And Earl's laid there, and he began to talk to himself. Anybody ever talk to themselves? It's a known fact that people that talk to themselves have higher intelligence. Have you ever answered yourself while you talk to yourself? That means you have even higher intelligence because you like to listen to intelligent conversation. And Earl said to himself, Earl, you got nothing to lose because you lost it all. What did you always want to do? Earl, talking to himself, he said, I want to go around the world on a steamship. So he made arrangements. The doctor said, you'll be dead. He said, I know, my casket's on the steamship with orders to the captain. In case of my death, put me in the deep freeze, bring me back to the family farm in Nebraska where I'll be buried. But an amazing thing happened. Earl didn't die. He got rid of fear. He got rid of worry. He got on that steamship and started having the time of his life. The ulcers disappeared. The weight started coming back. He said within a few weeks, he was smoking long black cigars with the deckhand and drinking highballs. That's a true story. You got to wear twice. I say that. I could say that C3 San Diego. But that's what the story said. All of his weight came back. He made the whole trip. It was every time I saw India and China, he said, I thought I had it bad. They have it a whole lot worse than I ever had it. He said, totally restored, health totally restored, came back, made his fortune back, and lived to be a ripe old age because he had nothing. Once you come to the fact that I've got nothing to lose and I've got everything to gain, when I got everything to gain, when I've lost, I got everything to gain, then you'll do something. Then you'll, are you with me? And then the last thought. The last thought, it said they rose up at twilight. That's just so depict, because most of us, if I'm going to rise up and take a journey, I'm going to wait till daylight because I can see. I have a visual. I can see in front of me. I'm going to wait till daylight. So they got up at twilight. Jesus walked on the water, the Bible said, at twilight. There's something in that. Because at twilight, I could only see in front of me. In daylight, I have a long horizon. In twilight, I can see in front of me. The Bible said God's word's a lamp to my feet. It's a light. It doesn't say it's a spotlight into my future. The difficulty in life is sometimes we want to know everything out there, and so we don't do anything in here. But what if I do something in here, then that begins to come into view, and it changes my future. So I get paralyzed with today because I'm too focused on the future. They rose up. In 1871, there was a young man that was graduating from Yale University with a medical degree. He didn't know what profession he was going to go into. He wasn't sure what type of medicine he was going to. So he was worried. I mean, his mind was cluttered with fear, with worry. What am I going to do? For whatever reason. The commencement speaker of his graduation was the famous Thomas Carlyle. Carlyle stood up and spoke 21 words. That's all it took to completely change that young man's life. It's amazing, isn't it, that we don't have to have books. I love books, but don't get me wrong. But I don't need a whole book to change my life. In a service like this, sometimes one thought, one word, one idea can so burn, can so register, can so shed light on the inside of me that something illuminates inside of my heart, inside of my mind. I say, that's it. That's it. I can do that. I read this story years ago, and I thought, this is so powerful. I remind myself of this story every day when I wake up because I think it's so graphic. 21 words change this young guy's life. Those words are, he heard Carlyle said, your main business is not to see. It's not to see what lies dimly, dimly, I love that, dimly in the distance. The distance is always dim. The Bible says you know in part, thank God. You don't want to know everything because it'll paralyze you today. I need enough to do what I need to do. He said our main business is not to focus on what lies dimly in the distance, but to do what lies clearly at hand. I always know when you woke up today, you knew what to do. When you wake up tomorrow, you'll know what to do. And so that young guy heard that and it burnt within him. He said, I'm going to focus on what lies clearly. I know what lies clearly at hand. His name was William Osler. William Osler went on to become one of the founders of Johns Hopkins University. He went on from there to be knighted. He was knighted by the King and Queen of England. He became the Regius Professor of Medicine at Oxford, the highest place you can ever get in the medical profession in the common in the, all the Commonwealth nations. He reached the utopia. When he died, it took 1,400 pages to write of all his accomplishments. He has books written about him, massive books. 42 years after that day, he was given the commencement speech at Yale. And he stood up before all those students and he said, I was where you were 42 years ago. He said, what I've done in my life is not was not because of my intellect, although he was smart. It was not because of my talents, although he had them. It was not because of my skills, although he had them. He said, everything God has done in and through my life came with one simple truth. I did what lied immediately before me with everything I had, and I left the rest up to God. Because tomorrow, the future, is always in the moment. It's in the moment. Tomorrow is inside of today. And when I put my best into today, it builds the material of my future. Stand up with me. Stand up.
Thank you so much for joining us online. We hope you had a powerful experience. We want to take this time to personally help you navigate the next steps in becoming connected. If you made a decision for Christ today, need prayer, or want more information about our church, go to our website, c3sandiego.com. And if you didn't get a chance to give online during service and would like to contribute financially, you can go to c3give.com and click on the giving option that works best for you. We look forward to hearing from you. See you at church.